The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Becoming a member at Navy Federal can help you earn more and save more. You can learn all about this at NavyFederal.org.
Leather craft felt good to me, right? It was, you know, I'm a breacher, so like high RPM, like machinery gets me like jacked up. There's no peace there for me.
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
I was a breacher, right? So I built charges, and I was essentially like, if I was going to give my brother something, it had to be perfect, because with a charge, if it's not built correctly, somebody gets hurt or it doesn't work, right? And so I took that like same attention to detail, that same like, if I'm going to build something for somebody, it has to be like the best, right? And so that's where, like, in a weird way, I just like the craft of being a breacher with my faith, working with your hands, and the therapeutic aspect of leather work, right? Because I couldn't be around high RPM machines because my freaking heart would start going because I'm a breacher, right? I cut doors open and stuff. So leather working was like quiet, and then I went all in, dude. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, but I walked into a Salvation Army, bought an old leather belt for $1. And I was like, oh, I could turn that into dog collar for some weird reason. Because the team got mine, right? Like, we're always, we're repurposers, like idea men's, like, you know what I mean? And if I could take an idea here and turn it into $1 million, like, you know,
so
I'm jacked up, dude. Do you ever get young team guys that are sitting across from you? Like, holy smokes. Like, that's Marcus Luttrell, dude. Like, I've never met you in person, but like, I've read your books. I was like first in line waiting for the movie to come out, dude. And I'm like, now you're in front of me and I'm freaking out.
Now you're
like,
here, man.
It's crazy. But you're just like a team guy. It's weird, dude. Your dad's like a celebrity, and it's just weird to see you in person. And you guys, like, thanks for having me.
Of course, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, How old were you when you read the book?
I think I was in high school sometime, or maybe like middle college. I don't remember. I can't even remember what I had for breakfast.
How old are you now?
I am 31.
Oh.
So my thing was my...
Bro, you're still in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're still locked in. Being a team guy is something completely different. I don't know if you've picked up on that yet. Once that Trident got tacked into your chest, everything changed for you. So there is a cycle we have to go through like buds.
Yeah, I miss it every day, dude. Like,
and that's the whole point, but you're not really out of it. Mm-hmm. You're still in it. And this phase, you're like, when you were like, hey, I had to go through this. Yeah, me too. I was first, kind of one of the first ones through it. Now I'm out here on the other side saying everything you're going through is happening to you for a reason. Your faith ought to have already prepped you for that.
John 3:16, baby. It's on every box.
Yeah, so as you're going through this, anytime you get frustrated by something, just remember you're a team guy, so you get fucked with on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay, check. Just roger that.
Keep
that freaking attitude about being a team guy, have the best time with it, and just keep doing what you're doing.
Because it's part of who you are.
Yeah, it's part of who you are.
Yeah.
It's stitched into you, man. It's your DNA. I mean, you understand what I'm talking about now. Once there's a code that's stitched into you as hardcore as that freaking leather, then no matter what you do, you have to act like that because that's what you're supposed to be representing. If you're one alpha in a freaking bunch of men like you that all exist somewhere and they see you walk in, they'll automatically come to attention and hear what you can say when sometimes they won't hear what I have to say. And it's all because of how you're wired.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's different for every SEAL. That's why none of us are alike.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question of the day. Today we've got, what is your favorite home-cooked meal from mom? Hmm. You're staring me down.
What have I made you?
My mother's sitting right here.
Your mama's right here.
Yeah.
I know. Well, something
my
that...
My mother listens to this, so I better make sure I...
Something that I would absolutely love right now, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's that soup that you make.
Supa Toscana.
Yes, you knew exactly which one it was.
Yeah.
That is good. Absolutely delicious.
Marcus took over making that because he's got an Instant Pot. He loves the Instant Pot. But I make it slow in the old school pot. Hunters always love that.
What about you?
Probably chili. You know, my mom, she'd make chili. She'd take like everything in the refrigerator and just put it into the thing and just cook it for like a couple of days. And half the time you just had to, you know, it was good.
I love it.
You had no choice but to say it was good too.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Like there's an imprint of certain foods that your mother makes.
Yeah.
And when we go out and especially the travel the world the way we do and have to eat and all the places we have to do, you run across the same dish made by somebody else, you can really taste it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I noticed that same thing. My mother makes a prime rib only on Christmas.
Mm-hmm. It's actually in a cookbook. Steve Ducey from Fox and Friends in the morning. He came with friends. It's Happy Something.
In a Hurry. Happy in a Hurry cookbook. Happy in a Hurry cookbook.
Sorry, Steve.
But
it's a cookbook, and he has several different additions to it. But one of them, he has Mama Luttrell's prime rib in there. And we get calls all the time saying, I made the prime rib.
So good.
It's so good only once a year.
I'm going to cook it.
I want to eat it all the time. It's one of those deals, but that's willpower right
there. It's so good. It actually turned a vegan back to a carnivore.
Yeah, there was witnesses to that.
Yeah.
Because of the way it smelled.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because of the way that damn thing smelled when he was walking through the house, he was like, I've never eaten.
We had a photographer out here, and he was a straight up vegan, looked like a vegan.
Looked like one.
He played the part great. He looked super skinny,
and he said, you know, I don't eat meat, but what's that smell? And I'm like, that's Mama's prime rib. And it was like, I mean, in his everything. And he walked out. And he was about to leave. And then he turned back because she kept offering it to him. And he's like, no, I don't eat meat. He came back in and said, do you mind if I have one bite?
Gave in.
And then he takes a bite and ends up asking for a to-go plate.
He probably had a coma after he had to eat like 2 years.
Sweats, dude, behind the knees and the eyelids are sweating.
I can't imagine his bathroom stop coming back. Because if just you haven't eaten meat.
That should be you should turn that into a t-shirt right there. Yeah. You know, prime rib's so good.
I think that's going to be on her tombstone.
That's awesome.
I turned a vegan into a carnivore.
Or the prime rib.
I'm going to have to get that recipe.
That's my mother. She was the prime rib.
She also makes some mean fried chicken.
And the rolls. She makes only on Thanksgiving.
Oh, she makes these rolls. His mom is an amazing cook, which is really hard to follow a woman like that. Like,
pressure's on.
Okay, so I didn't think... Okay, bro, that thought didn't even cross my mind when I got married. And, I was like, my mother has to live right next door. So I didn't put the food war thing together.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a war. I want her to do all of it. I'm not trying to take it over. I'm like, you do it. You do you. You keep feeding your son.
She cooks great, too, though. That's the problem, man.
Mm, but I don't cook like your mom does, and she's an amazing cook.
No one ever will. That's what I was talking about earlier. Whatever your mom, when you come up on that, you can't help it.
Yeah, that's a good question, Hunter. Everybody's got it. My mom, I would say, we're from Louisiana, and we have certain like Cajun staples. She makes a rice and gravy that is so freaking good. And she made, which is basically like smothered meat, like a chuck roast or something. And she makes a crawfish etouffee that is.
Oh, etouffee.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Real good.
So good.
Yeah. So.
All right. That was a good question.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Welcome to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
I got a file on you and everything. One thing that our listeners love is the run into team guys. Like, they're just hearing about you, where you're from, and how you're wired.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, from the littlest things. And you don't put that together when you're in. You don't put it together when you're young or anything like that, man. But if you remember back when we were young, you're always looking for somebody or something to guide you out of whatever it is you're in.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
SEALs are that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as soon as you get the trident pinned on you, it doesn't matter how much you get beat up, what happens to you, just walk tall, have a great attitude. Remember, keep that.
Yep.
So that's what a lot of people love to hear about. To start this off, man, before getting the SEAL teams and stuff like that and what you're doing for a living now, where are you from?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Tampa, Florida. I kind of like lived all over the place, right? So as far as like one specific...
Brat?
Am I what?
Are you a military brat?
No. Okay, no. So raised by a single mother, did the best she could. We moved all over. So there's not like one specific place that I think is like my home. I recognize Florida as that, right? So yeah, I grew up young kid, same old thing, getting into trouble, right? I didn't have much oversight as a kid, but you know, I've always been fascinated with the military and, you know, men in green faces and, you know, what's going around my neighborhood.
I absolutely remember that book.
Writing down license plates, thinking I'm a spy when I'm like 8 years old, you know. So
okay, because you look just like Jeffrey Donovan, dude. Have you seen Burn Notice?
Is that show down in Miami?
Yes. Where he's like I figured you would have seen this.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He's great.
Yeah, yeah.
He's freaking great, dude. Yeah. That guy, man. And no one's ever thrown that on you?
No, they tell me I look like Seth MacFarlane. I don't know.
I don't see that.
I don't see it either.
I definitely see some Jeffrey Donovan, especially when you get fired up.
Jeffrey who?
Jeffrey Dahmer?
Donovan.
Oh, Jeffrey Dahmer.
I know. I thought you were saying Dahmer, too. I'm no, like, Jeffrey that's Donovan. A horrible insult.
I mean, you are a team guy. You never know. No, Jeffrey Donovan. Yeah. That's his name.
Donovan.
Yeah, Donovan.
Yeah, that's a good show. But yeah, so I grew up down there kind of.
A lot of people, they didn't know about the SEAL teams. Mm-hmm. We used to keep this thing hidden pretty well.
Yeah.
But then there's some things, like when I remember very vividly what it was. There was a documentary, The Silent Option.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's voice.
Yeah.
As soon as it opens up and he starts talking about that we're cut from a different cloth and get paid to take risks. I mean, I just ate that. I mean, like I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the movie Navy SEALs with Charlie Sheen.
That's it?
Those two things right there, yeah. Coupled with my brother leading the charge is what got me in. Mm-hmm. What got you?
But you were from a generation where all the SEAL stuff was out. You had Marcus's books out. You had Chris Kyle's book out. So what year did you graduate?
Graduated from
high school.
High school was 2011.
Yeah.
So yeah, the marketing side on the Navy was huge. So yeah. All the books came out. I read them all. Yours, Jay Redmond, Chris Kyle, David Goggins was out there. Dude, he was a big recruiter for the Navy. I think they were kind of using
his. He was still with the Navy.
Yeah, yeah. I got to run with him in prep, actually.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you that. I was like, hey, you ever run across one of us beforehand? And if it was Doc Goggins, because he was a recruiter.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, he was up in Great Lakes doing the prep thing. But, yeah, so... You know, that was my introduction to it was, you know, that recruitment side. I had family members who were in the teams too, still in the teams actually. And
you're a legacy?
Kind of a distant legacy, yeah. So
the bastards. That's what they call us, right? Yeah.
And so I kind of always knew what, like, you'd come home, you'd hear stories like through the family and stuff, and you're like, man, that is cool. But it was really, you know, just I think serving my country was always something I wanted to do. But and if I was going to do it, it had to be. I wanted to do it at, you know, not to say like the hardest thing I could do, but it was the attraction of the SEAL teams and, you know, did you have what it takes to make it to that training and to be in a group of men like that, right, doing what we do, was for me, was like the dream.
What year was that? How old were you when that started?
The recruiting side on the Navy, I mean, they were hitting it pretty hard when I was in high school.
So
right?
It started in high school is when you saw it?
Yeah, started in high school, and that's when I really kind of decided, man, like I want to be a team guy. I want to be a frogman. And so like most guys, what do? We start, we tie our hands together. We jump in the pool thinking, hey, you know, help us. We start taking cold showers or.
I did that too.
Yeah. I used to put in earbuds and, you know, David Goggins is waking up at 3 a.m. to go run 20 miles or something, or 40 miles. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to put that in and I'm just going to go for a run. Cause you know, he is, he's an amazing human, dude. And so he's for me in
Goggins
high school.
Isn't human.
He's inhuman.
We know Goggins very well on a personal level. So we can attest he is not human.
Yeah.
I remember getting up too, singing, like going for jogs and singing cadences that I thought the SEALs had done and stuff like that. I mean, into it just like that. Like if you're out there and you're wanting to be a SEAL and this stuff's happening to you, like if it's calling to you, like makes you do weird stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like tie yourself together and throw yourself in a pool by yourself,
or swim across the lake in your backyard.
Yeah, you know, like if you're doing weird stuff like that, we're probably your place.
Yeah, and if you tell guys like you know when you're like a high school kid, and you're like, oh yeah, I want to go to Buds, try to be a SEAL. Most people laugh at you. They're like, oh sure, you're gonna make it, buddy.
Yeah,
but they'll be like, I'll be like, what should I do to prepare? Like, should I be taking cold showers all the time? They're like, nah, you don't need to do that. But for me too, it was a big part of like when you see the evil of. you know, 9/11 and those kinds of things. You know, I was really young when that happened, but you still want to kind of get a piece of the revenge factor. And so for me, I knew that there was this unfathomable evil that existed in this other part of the world, and I knew that brave men were going to those areas to confront that, right, to keep us safe. And for me, that was something that I wanted to be a part of, you know. And I figured, you know, like when I went to Buzz, dude, I was like, I will never quit. Like, you can kill me in this freaking pool.
What was that like
pool.
When you checked out? I mean, because had you been anywhere before?
So
the Navy, did you travel at all, or did y'all stay like in town?
No, so I was a little bit of a troublemaker in high school, and I got a really good mentor.
We all are.
Yeah, yeah. So I got a really good mentor who came into my life. Yeah. And so then I kind of like had this weird thing where I dropped out of high school, then I dropped back in because I had a good mentor, helped get me through. He helped get me into college, actually. And then I got to college, and I was like, I don't really want to do this. I want to go join the Navy and try to go become a SEAL. And I ended up getting to college. I graduated like 2.5 years. And then I enlisted in the Navy after I got my college degree. And
a lot of our guys do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does. In our community, we have officer enlisted, and it works well together. But the separation between us is just like, hey, we get in trouble, man. The officers have to take the hit.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what absolutely.
I mean, they're educated, and they get real educated as they get older, too. That's the thing about them. Like, we've streamlined the system now. If you come in, mm-hmm. But a lot of the guys, the mentor thing's huge. Like, I had that too, man.
Yeah.
And and when we say mentors, it's not somebody who's always with you all the time. It's like periodically they'll say, hey, get your ass back in check.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I think you can do this. And you'd be surprised. It doesn't take that much, especially for guys like us.
Mm-hmm.
You just needed to hear it from somebody.
Yeah.
Not beat me to death with it. I mean, just hear it from somebody is all it takes.
Yeah.
And we don't think that. We think, oh, I got to put hours and days and weeks into that sucker. Like, no, you don't. No, not at all. Matter of fact, all he has to know is that you expect that out of him.
Yeah.
And we'll do it.
Yeah, and that was a cool thing with the mentorship side. Even before you join the Navy, they have a mentor, like another SEAL who brings you up,
yeah.
Kind of puts you through your own crucible, kind of weed you out. But yeah, my first mentor I had was my principal of my high school, right? He's like, he had this big sign in his office. He said, don't do dumb things, right? And
that's great.
It's like, as
Simple.
A young kid,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
What I needed to hear. But, you know, to have that kind of a father figure in your life who kind of helps keep you on the straight and narrow was something that, you know, I'll always be thankful for. And that's why I'm a big believer. And no matter where you are in life, grab a mentor. And then when you get to that place where you think you can give back, be that mentor, right? Yeah. And the cycle takes care of itself.
Girl, I have that sticker in the Jeep. Says, don't do dumb things.
Just really?
Yeah. Absolutely,
that's
crazy.
Man. I'd love to send you a picture.
It says it's simple.
Yeah.
Because when you get in there, most of the time you're going in to do some dumb stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's just a constant reminder.
Yep. Yep.
I get that. So was your principal?
Yeah, it was my principal in high school.
Did you ever reach back out to him and tell?
Yeah, I reached back to him and I said,
they dig that.
Yeah, yeah. His name was Paul Ott, one of the greatest guys ever. And he was kind of the person who kind of started to put that seed in you about God and all of that. And so I texted him. I've kept in touch with him. You always keep in touch with the people who helped you get from
mm-hmm.
maybe a bad situation through it. And so I text him a picture, you know, of me. I think I was with doing something, had a big old beard. I say, look where I am now, you know, and he's been following me ever since. And it's cool, right? Because when I get, I'm going to continue that. And I hope to be that, you know, mentor for the next kid up and coming, whether it's in business or joining the military or whatever, because you almost got to pay it forward, right? Because my life is forever changed because of like just a few mentors I've had.
Yeah.
One of Marcus's mentors ended up marrying us.
That's
so
awesome.
So yeah, that was like full circle for
it
us.
Fast. Sure did.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's funny, man, because if you take our guys and throw us in other environments, people would look at us like criminals or lowlifes or, I mean, right? You put that trident on there, though, it changes everything. Still the same guy.
Oh, yeah. You go from like, you know, you got a lot of, when you accomplish something like that, you get a lot of, it's maybe like a status, but you get a lot of friends. And then,
well, it's because they know that discipline and manners and respect come out of that crew. And we could be wildlings, everything. We got them.
Yeah.
Dude, we got everything in there. But then when people look at him, you see that trident, it means that you can put that sucker down, and they can get in line, and they can do some awesome stuff together.
Yeah,
and absolutely. That in itself knows, I don't care how wild he is, man, he's got some discipline. All he's got to do is give him some direction.
Yeah.
So did you go through with Justin Hughes?
Justin Hughes, he's an artist.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit before me. Yeah.
It's tough to keep up with all y'all now,
well,
man.
Well, the only reason I say that is because, well, what year would you have gone through Buds?
2015, 2016 time frame.
I was thinking like 2012 because that's when we actually were at the Buds compound when he was in Buds and Marcus like slipped in and spoke to the class.
That's cool.
And, yeah, but yeah, that would have been before you.
So when you what class did you go into?
312.
You started. What happened when you got?
Yeah, rolled in pool comp and I graduated 313.
All right, second phase. Tell me this, man. What was it like when you stepped in there the first day? Was it what you thought?
Is first
it like the documentaries in the movie? I try and tell people this all the time. I was like, man, you can watch many movies as you want.
Dude, that intro.
When you step in there on that first freaking day and our boys light into you, God, I'll never forget it. I know it's right.
Yeah, I think, you know, I remember going over the Coronado Bridge for the first time. Right?
I remember that too.
They pick us up. They pick you up from the airport. You're coming from, you know, Illinois, Great Lakes, and you haven't seen the sun in like months and you're pale. And then you're on the beach in Southern California. You're going over that bridge. You're like, oh, looking over the bridge. It's the most surreal experience because you're like, man, I've made it this far, right?
It's almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like
because the dells, you can see it's all beautiful too.
It's just like
you can't see us hidden in there. That was the cool part too. You're like, oh, look, it looks beautiful here.
And you get picked up from the airport by like the rollbacks, right? And these guys are all like tanned up and they're all jacked because, you know, whatever.
Everyone's in shape.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get to the compound, or I think it was, you know, where the first phase office is, and you're going in through the check-in to then go to Indoc, but you see all the bud students that are all tanned, and you see the guys who've been through Hell Week, and they got their brown shirt and their
dude,
UDTs.
They just look hard as
they just look hard as nails. Southern California
it's
boys.
It's the scariest thing to see when you first roll in there is a bud student.
Yeah. G-Shock on.
We're never as tough as that.
Yeah.
In my opinion, man, it's like, dude, when them suckers are in buds, it's like a canine training unit you can't even fathom. So I call it Hogwarts.
Yeah. I mean, Hogwarts. Everybody got blonde hair.
Excuse me, not Hogwarts. Frogwarts, man. It's our own little technical school, bro.
Dude, everybody's got blonde hair.
Everyone
like
has blonde hair.
Pool.
Everyone has blonde hair.
Yeah. It's so fun, dude.
Everyone has the same pair of UDT shorts. They're all the same size.
Oh, yeah.
None of them fit. Dude,
and everyone's handsome.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Take ugly guys. Can't be ugly.
Yeah. You're like, man.
I remember the instructor.
Am I going to be one of them one day? You know, like, what are they going to fill me with?
We had an ugly guy in my class, and I remember the instructor first phase. First workout, they're like, there's just the way how you think you're going to make it through here.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a rule. And I mean, they were real calm about it. You know how they get, right? The instructors,
when
they want to
they're
really
like real calm.
Real calm. Like, dude, you're like third world handsome, but not really. You know what I mean? And they just kind of start hitting with it. Oh, yeah, we don't have any ugly guys. That's part of it. We guard that.
Well, did you have any moments in Buds that's like super standout, memorable for you?
Hopefully we can talk about that on this podcast, but I think, you know, Hell Week will always be memorable, right? I think the funny thing is, you know, you're doing like push-ups and some guy's got projectile diarrhea and it's, you know, it's like dripping down his pants and you're going in them, you know what I'm saying? And the instructors are yelling at you. I mean, dude, it's hard to pick out one specific memory. There's a couple memories of like right before I blacked out in pool comp, you see the instructor coming over to like punch the air out of your lungs, that kind of thing. But
I hated pool comp.
Yeah.
What was your hardest phase? First, second, or third?
I think probably second phase. I had some kind of lung issue and I couldn't hold my breath a long time. I couldn't barely hold my breath for 20 seconds. And
you
know,
a
if you're gonna
lung?
No, I grew up diving.
Huh?
I grew up like diving, spearfishing, doing all that stuff. So I prided myself in like, oh, I'm going to get in the water and I'm going to do.
That sounds pretty thin.
And but I got some lung thing and I couldn't hold my breath. And when you're doing pool OCA, I'm like, you need a good breath hold, right? And so I got rolled, blacked out a bunch of times. But
you don't realize how much of an ass kicking that is. That's probably the most intense thing I've been through. I know it's supposed to simulate surf hits and it does because mm-hmm. I've been caught in the zone plenty of times. My instructor gave me full benefit, man. Mm-hmm. That freaking guy was a master at it. Instructor Calvin, dude. I mean, masterful.
Who were some of your instructors that scared the shit out of you?
I would say they're still in, so I don't know if I want to give out their name.
That's fine. No,
but,
you don't have to.
one of the guys is a well-known group of brothers. He was
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. He was a hammer, dude. And
Magnificent.
Yes.
Dick. Dude, that motherfucker can be a freaking magnificent asshole. He can be me. What they say, dude, is awesome. Yeah.
Have you ever Googled yourself and found a little bit more info than you'd like? Well, your personal information is exposed and for sale. Data brokers everywhere are selling your details to scammers, spammers, and anybody willing to pay. That's where Aura comes in, the guardian of your digital privacy. It scans the depths of the internet to uncover whoever is selling your data. And that's why I've been using Aura, the sponsor of today's video. With Aura, you can take control, wipe out your digital footprint, reduce spam, and shield from hackers. Aura protects against unseen online threats, just one subscription and countless protections. You may have some protection, but without Aura, it's like leaving the back door wide open. It's always on guard, so you can focus on your life and not any cyber worries. Value your privacy, value mine, safeguard our digital lives. Start your 2-week free trial at aura.com/TNQ. Stop those data brokers from exposing your personal information. Go to my sponsor at aura.com/TNQ for a 14-day free trial and see how much of yours is being sold. This is a paid promotion. Offer subject to terms and conditions. Go see our website for details.
Yeah, and he was memorable, man. He made it fun, and he, you know, I loved the savageness of it, right? Like
Dude, there's something about some of them guys that can make you laugh while they're like what they're saying is so funny that you laugh, but and you're getting pissed,
and then they're beating you for laughing.
Yeah, it's a there's no other place like it on the planet of Earth.
Yeah, it's one of the I feel so grateful to have been through that training, man, and. Just like you form some really cool relationships with your guy. Like I still to this day talk to dudes from my, you know, my boat crew and Hell Week because it's just like there's that.
How many did you graduate with?
Bonding. It was less than 30.
Yeah.
Anybody
die yet?
In training?
At wherever.
Just in your buds classes.
Is everyone still alive?
Yeah, everybody.
Still got everybody?
I think everybody's still there. I'm probably one of the first dudes like out, right? Yeah. Not by choice, but.
Yeah, you won't be the last.
Yeah.
It's just part of the job.
So, and yeah, we'll get into that, but that's the most important thing is keeping that line of comms and helping guys, you know, as they come away from that because filling that void
is
hard. It's really hard.
The worst thing that happens to us is when they get out, they push us out by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Team guys are not designed to survive like that. There's a swim buddy thing we got to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that should be an assignment when you get out, like, hey, this is your swim buddy for being out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, until he dies, we'll give you a new one. Until you make your friends. But those guys who get out and get alone, then they get alone.
Yeah.
So if you went to one, and that was in like 2015, 2016, were you with Josh Wynn?
Josh Wynn. I don't.
No, he would have been an officer because he was at one. That was his last.
I don't remember what year it was.
Yeah, that was his last thing to do on the West Coast. Anyway, he's one of our close friends, and he's out. He lives here now in Magnolia.
Okay,
yeah.
So your primary when you were in, what's your job? You're a breacher?
Yeah, so I was a breacher, and yeah.
How many platoons you do?
Just one, unfortunately.
Then that's when you got hurt?
Yeah, so I had, in about a year time frame, three pretty bad TBIs. Guy got in a really bad Humvee accident. It had a pretty big wall charge kind of hang fire on me. And then when we were overseas doing some helocasts, I took a Zodiac motor to the head.
Dude, I heard about that.
When they were coming in to land. And it was like the, I think too, like the compound effect, right? And like being kind of that post-concussive syndrome, right? That kind of like lost my mind, you know, had a lot of issues, vision, balance. And... You know, it's weird with traumatic brain injury because you like you can look at yourself and you look fine, but maybe you can't. You know, there's all kinds of things you can't see.
Right.
And so, I what I wish I would have done is after that Humvee accident, right, taking it upon myself to get the necessary help, right? But I was kind of like, I guess team guys are all like,
team
I'll
guy.
Just push it under the rug, man.
Yeah, you're a team guy. Don't
keep
run
going.
It.
But I really didn't do a good job of taking care of myself, right? And I think wrongfully I was probably – I didn't want to leave like the guys, right? You want to always be there.
Bro, I get that. Were you married?
Yeah, I went through a pretty bad divorce.
Okay, so you're a regular team guy.
Then. Yeah.
Okay. Look, some of the old timers, like the Chiefs especially, when they tell us certain things and we don't listen, mm-hmm. they say, you know, SEAL Chief, he's not going to waste his breath on us for no damn reason.
Yeah.
And like going through some of those cycles of life is part of being a team guy. Like you get into that.
Yeah.
If I could tell the guys are still in one thing, I'd be like, don't worry about that, right? And that's part of it. I mean, yeah, we're hollering at you, but that's, you know, it's like a rite of passage for all of us. Mm-hmm. It's like we're one kind of deal.
Yeah.
It's as the younger guys get out and they rotate back around, it's incumbent upon us to teach, you know, to be there for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is it keeping that pass down kind of going?
That's how
always.
We stay alive.
Yeah.
That's how team guys stay alive, man.
Yeah. It's like 50-50 security, right? Like I'm looking after you and you're looking after me. Therefore, 100%. I don't have to look after myself.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Like as soon as the guys get through Buds and get that Trident, they're part of the fraternity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's when you're in the teams that you're trying to earn your way out to be a vet.
Yeah.
Which is the coolest place to be. As a SEAL, it was when you get out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vietnam guys had it bad. But the storms and the shields started bringing us together. And when the GWATs got back, when my generation got back, man, we pulled everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time y'all get out of here, man, y'all are already entrepreneurs and making millions of dollars and shit like that. Well, I was sleeping in a ditch. I mean, having a great time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So it advances.
Yeah.
But you were one of the first guys to get out.
Yeah, I'm one of the test cases. I freaking loved it too.
Yeah.
During the heavy war.
My thing was, is I went through some really bad times, right? I lost my, you know, for me, I got my purpose and my paycheck all in one uniform, right? And when I had issues with my cognitive abilities to where I could no longer continue with the boys and could no longer, be somebody that was a part of the, you know, tip of the spear, right? It was like my whole life felt kind of worthless, right? And I went to a point where, you know, I had isolated myself from everybody who cared about me. I was jacked up on a ton of pills. Like the list was insane. There was a pill for waking up, a pill for going to sleep, and there were symptoms from one pill, so they stacked another pill on top of that. And dude, I was like a walking freaking chemistry experiment, right? And I only got worse, right? And I only got to the point where I said, you know, if I can no longer, like, probably traumatic brain injury, your emotion regulation is totally off. But I got to the point where like I didn't want to live anymore because my purpose, I wasn't ever going to find that out there. And you know, I didn't see my family as important, right? I had seen the evil downrange, right? I had watched these people that they need to be, you know, they need to be killed, right? And I had seen service members give their life. And for me, like the first time that you see an American service member who's given his life for freedom with an American flag covering his body coming home and you're standing watch over there over him, right? Or you're doing that ramp ceremony, that American flag means something completely different after you experience that, right? And so that was where, you know, and in a weird way, I kind of became selfish, right? I kind of became, not the humble, grateful team guy that I should have been. And, you know, I was a mess, dude. I was drinking pills. I was full of anger. And I walked and freaking, I hated, like, life, dude. And as crazy as that sounds, even though I had all these experiences to be grateful for, right? I mean, I'm still here. Like, I was lucky to survive those events, right? I was able to walk away from those intact, right? And so eventually my story kind of started to shift when I started kind of remembering, right? Remembering the sacrifices, remembering, the people that even though I'm not there, you know, get jocked up and getting on the helo, there's another guy right behind me that's doing that, who's left his family, who's putting himself in harm's way. And so, you know, that was for me my big shift when I was like, you got to remember, right? And you got to be grateful. And I have a second chance at life, right? And I need to make the most of it. And, you know, for me, like my everyday carry, so to speak, is I carry the names and the faces and the memories of the great heroes, right, that we all know that paid the ultimate price. And that's how I you know, I had to shift my attitude, man. But for a while, I was banging on my high chair because I was like, I can't go to war. I can't be with my boys. Like, my life's pointless. When in reality, I reframed it so that I can still serve. I can still be a good example. I can still protect my buddies because when they get out, right, I can mentor them.
Yeah.
I'm still and checking
get into,
up.
You got to get
them.
Out and get into something.
Well, yeah. How did you go through NICO or any kind of program that helped you get to that thought process?
It was kind of like it was a really bad situation, right? So I had all these traumatic brain injury issues, and now COVID-19 was full bore, right? Everybody was like, all the programs were shutting down. It was like roll 30, roll 60. You know, you would be like, hey, we're going to send you to NICO. We're going to send you to Intrepid Spirit. But then they'd be like, COVID in California. I mean, they were rationing out meat. Like, it was pretty weird. Everybody was on lockdown. So I couldn't get into those. Prestigious, rehabilitative stuff. So, but I was doing everything I could, right? So essentially, like, it was, you know, when we got back from that first pump, I just had a lot of issues. And it was like trading your gun in, like, to go be at a hospital. And, you know, I don't know how long, if you guys have ever been to a hospital, but it's not a positive place. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very depressing, right? And
in the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it switches. Because in the beginning, when you're busted up, it's the best place.
And they're giving you drugs and all that.
I mean, it's awesome. And then when you heal up, if you have to, you don't want to recover in there.
Mm-hmm. It's not a recovery.
It's not a recovery. That's the difference. You'll feel, if you've been in one long enough, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It just kind of eats at you.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it was just the pill stack, dude. It was pill after pill after pill after pill, and that's where, you know. And then I started having like these things called TIA, like mini strokes, like TIAs, trans ischemic attacks. Yeah. Right. And they would really mess my speech up. And so it was just, dude, it was like one thing bad after another. So it was like, I was there trying to get the help. The help really wasn't available. And the help that was there wasn't working. I felt like it was just making me worse. Right. And then at the same time, you lose your purpose. Right. And then, you know, my personal life was also falling apart at that time, because most people, they'll be your best friend when you're a team guy, active duty, whatever, doing your thing. And then you have a setback. Like, the best thing that ever happened to me was, like, I had what I call total life reset, right? I was like this thing and had this title that people, they'll respect me for. And that thing went away, and the inventory of people in my life also went away, right? And so it's crazy, because that, like, I call it like hero to zero, right? I was like, I went from this, you know, dude with a title, status, whatever. And then here I was, like, living in the back of my truck, like, pretty much essentially a homeless veteran, no money, no purpose. Addicted to anti-everythings, anxieties, antidepressants. And it was just like one bad thing after another. And then I rebuilt my life when I went through alternative medicines and got the hyperbaric oxygen therapy, did the ketamine therapy, did all this stuff. And then I rebuilt my life. So I was like hero, zero, back to hero. Now I run this successful company where, you know, I'm getting my belts into the hands of people, and then my phone's blowing up all the time now. It's like, you know, like, where were you then, man? But you know, my thing is just, I try not to hold grudges, no blame, no anger, no nothing. I move forward, you know, try to love everybody and anybody that I can, and just try to be that good example and be kind of like the change I want to see. And I've applied that to like every little thing in my life, like with my business, with my family 2.0, right?
Well, sometimes God puts you in situations and takes those people away from you for a little bit so you can struggle on your own. And it has nothing to do with your friends. Your friends still love you, even though you feel like they turn their back on you. But you're at that moment, you weren't supposed to have them. You were supposed to feel the struggle by yourself.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in like this mentality, right? Every time you point your finger, there's three more pointing back at you.
Bro, and every time you open your mouth and talk bad about somebody, there's somebody talking bad about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know that for a fact happens.
Mm-hmm.
And with the pharmaceutical training, I told you, it's like being a team guy is tough. It never stops. Imagine Buds is, and I had to literally shift the way I thought because of it. And PTSD is pharmaceutical training, standby for dosage.
That's a good acronym.
Right?
That's
and
very
then
accurate.
Pissed off, tired, stoned, and drunk comes right after that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then once we make it through those cycles, it's almost like it was depressing to be pulled away from the team. So this is our mourning cycle.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I could have acknowledged it. And it was just readily available, that thing. But what happens is it covers everything that you're supposed to. Like, imagine Bud started, and then it doesn't stop till you get out. And I try to explain to civilians this mentality. Imagine walking into the gym one day and just working out for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And then right when they pull you out of it, you're going to be sore for a little while. Because you're trying to absorb all that. But instead of wanting to be sore, you take these pills to get rid of the... It's still going to be there.
Absolutely.
It's still going to be there. So when we get done with that, and that all clears up, and then you find it, the fire. I remember when I wanted to become a SEAL, I had a fire like you couldn't believe. Yeah. And I never had that again until here recently.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you know when you're supposed to do something. Mm-hmm. You freaking know it.
Yeah.
Especially team guys. You can't stop it. Everything you think of is about that.
Obsession.
Everything you put on...
Yeah.
You obsess over it.
Yeah.
And the harder you try to ignore it, the harder it gets.
Yeah.
That's how you know you're supposed to be doing something.
Yeah. And that's kind of like, it's all very common to us. It's like, if this is the thing I'm going after, then I will stop at nothing to achieve that. Like, even, like, you know, and it's like, even like, just whatever we have to do, no matter what, even if you have to, like, you know,
I don't know where that happens to us. I don't know what phase that happens when they install that in us, or when that gets turned on, or what the mechanism is that activates that, but it's in every one of us.
Yeah, that drive. And that's why when I find a team guy who's like starting a business or something, I'm like, dude, you're like, get in with this
dude.
It's going to be successful.
Especially if there's a couple of them. Yeah. I mean, you know how they are. If they both, all of them have the appetite for it, you can't. It's just, it's almost like we've just been waiting to see what you were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. These guys are good.
How did you get into the leather making or leather working?
Yeah. So I grew up in the city. I didn't know what leather working was. Cowboys, Texas, Montana, Idaho, all these places. Like, leather work is like a common thing. But when you grow up in the city, like, you don't know like what that is, right? It's there's no cowboy culture there. So I was, at that time in my life, I was absolutely broke, right? I was shopping at the Salvation Army. And I was just standing in there, standing in line, and I saw like an old dog or an old belt on the rack, right? And I like looked at that, and I, for some weird reason, right, the repurposed mind that we all have, I kind of looked at that leather belt, and I was like, man, that could look like a really good dog collar, right? Because at the time I was in a pipeline for a service dog, so I wanted it to have like a beefy, cool collar, right?
Bro, same thing happened to me, man.
And so I'm looking at that old leather belt, and I'm like, man, that could look good on a dog. And so I bought it, right? And I took it back to where I was staying at the time, and I chopped it, and I cleaned it with saddle soap, and I put a little bit of new hardware on there that I got from the arts and crafts store, and I looked at it, I was like, man, this looks pretty good, right? And so I took a picture of it. I was like, I bet I could sell that. I don't know. It's like one thing like after the other, right? It's like, I bet I could sell that. I put a picture of it on Instagram. Somebody bought it for me for like $45. Right. And I'm like, light bulb goes on. Because at the time, so here my timeline was injured, COVID-19 full bore, ended up getting medically retired from the teams into the civilian world. Nobody was hiring. Everybody was still on lockdown. So I couldn't find a job. So here I was, this, you know, I had something on my chest that meant I was something special, right? Or whatever. Maybe I had an ego issue or whatever, but I couldn't find a job. Nobody wanted to hire me, right? Because of all the turmoil going on in the United States at the time. And so I literally, you know, it was during that time that I did this whole, you know, the dog collar thing. And I was like, oh my man, I'm in business. Like, you know what I mean?
I tore my closet apart looking for cool stuff to put around my dog's neck.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it looked like a team guy. It was robust.
Tough, robust.
Same thing.
Yeah. So you could choke a dog off a bite or something.
Dude, man.
Yeah.
Dude. You know what I mean? That something happens to us. We think like that.
Yeah, and I think for me, I was like, okay. I went to every Salvation Army, Goodwill, thrift store, and I didn't know, like, you go to a leather store and, like, buy a bunch of leather. Yeah, so right. I'm, like, doing it the hard way, like, going to all these old thrift stores and buying up. And, dude, I had the crustiest, nastiest belts. I'd buy them, you know, I would go to – it got to the point where I was on, like, a first-name basis with the guys at the Salvation Army. They would go through the donation bins.
Dude,
and
I bet the homeless people were pissed at you for a while.
They're like, you're taking all our belts.
They got damn belts around here. What's going on here?
People probably thought I was crazy, man. I had to walk over.
Here comes
like,
the belt guy.
I'd have like 15 belts over my shoulder, and they're like the nastiest things, dude. Like an old donated leather belt that's like 15 years old is nasty. So
yeah.
I would take those, and I was, you know, and so I was driving around and going to all these thrift stores, buying them up. And that was my business model, right? And so the thing was, I would, leather craft felt good to me, right? It was, you know, I'm a breacher, so like high RPM, like machinery gets me like jacked up. There's no peace there for me. So I started, leather craft was like quiet. If I made a mistake, I could start over and I had to beat myself up, right? That was what I did. I sold dog collars on Instagram. And it was just a way to like make money, right? It was like how I was living. And at the time, I had no place to live, right? I was bouncing around my truck, like living in, like back of my truck, right? And part of that was, I think I created a lot of my own problems for myself just because I was just a mess, right? I was on a bunch of pills and kind of off my rocker. And, selling those dog collars, then I could get into an Airbnb, right? And I was like, I wasn't sleeping in my truck anymore. And I have to worry about security guards tapping on my window saying like, hey, you can't sleep here. Right. And so I got into that Airbnb and it was like, boom. And I saw, I'm running this business from like the kitchen table and the counters of these Airbnb people, right? Their counters are probably loose, 'cause I was hammering on them so damn hard. And, then one of my buddies who's in, he's like, hey man, can you make me a belt? I was like, okay, yeah, I can make you a belt. But I didn't know, like, I couldn't just repurpose an old belt from Salvation Army. So I had to, at that point, it felt like I was, like, creating something for my brother, right? I was, like, back in it. And that was the thing. It felt like I was contributing. Different feeling,
right?
Yeah.
It's a completely different feeling.
When you're making something for your boy who's going to wear
it's
as a tool.
It's completely different. That's what keeps us going, too. There's when you go in, there's the initial feeling when you get accepted to something. Mm-hmm. Then there's a purpose in there while you're doing it. And then the more you stay in there, the more it grows, and someone comes in and asks for something. That's completely different.
And then that obsession thing that you're talking about,
it switches gears.
And so then I was like, man, so I made a belt for him, like that he would wear. And I kind of took my own experiences from the teams and like, hey, what kind of weather conditions is he going to put it through? What's he carrying, right? He's carrying a sidearm and all these different things, tools, dump pouches, all that. So I was like, I have to make a really beefy, sturdy leather belt for him. I made him a belt. I sent it to him, and then I snapped a picture, put it on my dog collar website. And then next thing you know, I sold like 10 belts in a day, and I was selling them at like $100 back then. And I'm like, I made like $1,000 in a day. Obviously, half of it went to the government, but I was like,
they do that.
Light bulb.
Yep.
Light bulb. And so then I was like, man. And so that's like being a team guy has helped me as an entrepreneur. You're always being fluid in how you adapt, right?
And you can see a little bit further ahead.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, we started gobbling that stuff up. We were like, oh, well, then there's probably something to this.
Yeah. And that's where just like, you know, Semper Gumby, right? Always flexible, right? It's like, and so that's where you adapt to whatever the battlefield needs. Yep. And in entrepreneurship, it's the same thing. You adapt to whatever the needs of your customer base is. And so it was like, man, just like that, I became a belt business overnight. And I started, you know, and then I started, okay, now I'm a breacher. So let's go smash some things with this belt and show how tough it is, or tow trucks or whatever. And so that's where the creative team guy process came. Yeah, just smashing, going to the junkyard, having fun.
Get into the movie genres with that thing.
Oh, Marcus freaking loves the skit.
If there's a Mission Impossible where Tom Cruise throws that belt up over that wire, dude.
Yeah.
I told you, cliffhanger.
You could make it into a skit. This guy all day, write those down. Freaking loves it. That's why when I showed him your videos of you hitting the cinder block whatever.
I would just buy, obviously team guys.
Yeah.
Two is one, one is none.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have a belt for every occasion.
Yep.
Well, sold it to me like you did those commercials you make,
yeah.
I was like, well, you have one. I'm like, yeah, but I need that one to haul the truck with my waist.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, for me, right, it was like where I really did well was I kept everything. I just always reinvested, right? And this goes back to the mentorship we were talking about in the beginning.
Yeah, before you take for yourself, just kind of keep putting back into
it. Yeah, and I got two really great mentors, right? Their names are Jason Higgins and Andy Arbido. Andy Arbido runs Half Face Blades.
Arbido's
great.
Dude,
yeah, and he was like my business mentor, and he's like, just keep reinvesting.
He's like Team Guy Jesus.
Yes, dude. He is Team Guy Jesus. I'm
Team
forever.
Team Guy Jesus, man.
Dude, I had a
single. We all know who he is. I mean,
one of these belts is 700 stitches, right? So I had a single stitch manual sewing machine clamped to the Airbnb, and I was sitting there ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk 700 times to make one of these, right? And so, but for me, it's like,
hey,
I like
putting the work in, bro.
Yeah, I'm sweating and it's good. And I'm like, but I need that like physical outlet in the grinding steel, dude. Like I was an A-dub gunner, dude. And I love just feeling of steel grinding all that. And so, Andy bought me, you know, I was just starting out. I had no money. I was in an Airbnb, right? single stitch sewing machine. He bought me an automatic sewing machine that could, dude, I stitched the belt.
Team guys are great about that.
Yes, dude. And I paid him back as soon as I could.
They're freaking great about doing stuff like that.
But I was able then to scale. I was able to scale my business overnight, right? It didn't take me, it didn't take me 45 minutes to sew a single belt. Right. And I was in business.
Yeah, but now that you created this, when it comes time to pass it down or it's coming, people, you'll be like, hey, look, this is what I had to do in the beginning. It just kind of sets a standard. It's good.
That's really cool that he did that.
Yeah, he's the man. I'm forever grateful to that guy. So it was Andy, Jason Higgins, and then Eddie Gallagher really helped me out. I mean,
man.
Like, those guys, man, like, and people don't know, like,
they've been through a lot. Yeah. That crew you just said.
And they I was in such a bad situation, right? And those guys, like, they're that the act of kindness, them willing to support me, got me to, like, sitting in this chair right now, right? And so
that's what team guys do. Yeah. I mean, each one of us have to go through this freaking crazy ass trial and tribulation. And then it's just because, don't worry, your buddy's got to go through theirs too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my goal is to be there for them in that same regard that those guys were there for me. So what I did from moving on from that was I was like, okay, keep reinvesting. So we're going to start building our own buckles. But my thing was, when you go down range and you see the players going on in these proxy wars in these areas where we're at, like, for me, I didn't want to come home and be a salesman for China. I didn't want to source made-in-China screws. Hopefully, we're allowed to talk about this. Okay, cool. So, I was like, how do I make 100%?
Made in America,
bro. Hell yeah, cool. Yeah. Cool. So I was like, I have to do 100% made in the USA, right? And so, it's not, the supply chain is not available, like, straight up. Like, it's hard because we've done so much outsourcing in this country. Right. And so my thing was, okay, and then boom, it's like, now I got a mission, dude. I'm building the toughest belts in the world. I'm sourcing 100% in the USA. I'm creating jobs, right? And so I figured out a way, right? Every single thing in my belts is made in the USA. We get our leather in the USA, our threads made in North Carolina. Our buckles are made on these vintage World War II automatic screw machines made in Rochester, New York. And, and that was for me, like my, and so I aligned like entrepreneurship, making quality gear for people and putting America first. And so now I had purpose again, right? And so I, as weird as it sounds, right, I was like, I started a belt company and I figured out a way to continue serving through that by being a patriot-centric entrepreneur. And my whole goal is that other people will see that it can be done. Like, look, dude, I don't outsource anything. I'm 100% made in the USA. I'm a small business, but you can be profitable by producing here in the USA. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole goal is like, be the change to see.
Especially the first ones doing. Imagine that we had that all here and then it went away.
Yeah.
Remember how productive it was when we first had it? Now, the people who were coming in doing the American thing, that's, y'all are recreating something. And it's going to come back with a freaking vengeance.
And it's bringing patriotism back. Like, people actually care.
Just because you decided to make a belt, how many people now have jobs and across the country because of that?
Yeah, and that's been, for me, how I continue serving and protecting, right? And it takes a little bit of reframing, right?
Absolutely.
And although I would love to be sitting on a 47 with a gun in my lap with the boys, that chapter of my life is over. But so how do I carry on being a good example, being the change I want to see, and still kind of living a life that I can be proud of, right? It's all about legacy and generation, right? I want my son, because I think the ways of production that entrepreneurs have kind of taken in today's day and age have kind of resulted in where we're at now as a country, right? We're totally dependent. And my whole thing is, I don't believe in that model.
Yeah, independent. Mm-hmm.
And so everybody told me when I was starting out, like, hey, I want to be the largest manufacturer of 100% American-made belts in the world. They're like, oh, all my big business mentors, the guys that I pretty much had to, like, say, get out of here because they don't align with my views, they were like, it can't be done. I was like, oh, it can be done, right? But all they wanted to do was outsource me to Mexico, China, these places. But I said, that's not something that I can do. So we figured out a way to build our screws, build our parts, and we source the finest quality leather in the world from two of America's oldest tanneries. And we use really badass American-made machines. Like, some of our machines were literally used in World War II, and it's just cool to see, like, old machines back in action.
Yeah.
And then you go to the junkyard, you smash a bunch of stuff. And
so Hunter was talking about it. About belts and why is it such a big deal? I'm like, hey man, when you get a freaking belt that you really break into,
yeah,
it's kind of like having a great pair of shoes or a great hat or something like that.
Yeah,
I've been wearing the mess out of this one, the one you gave me, trying to break that sucker in. And I got to tell you, when you wake up in the morning and it's still holding its position, like you can jump into your pants.
Yeah. It's like a hula hoop.
Yeah. It really is. And you can, I don't know, the Intimidator, I don't know if you have the name, one of the names for that, man, but if
Intimidator,
you're
Intimidator, that's going to be one. I'll put it
beat
on.
Beat the dog shit out of somebody with his damn
thing, that's the whole thing, right? It's like, as a team guy, I'm always looking at what's a weapon. So I figured out a way.
Bro?
Yeah.
Man. When I latched this thing on, the funniest thing, the first thing that hit me, I was like, oh, you can carry a holster with this.
Yeah.
And a pistol.
Yep.
Easy. You don't have that wedge that forms down there and bites in.
Yeah.
That was easy. And a blade.
Yeah. And that's where not skimping on. It's like, if I was a breacher and I gave you a charger, I was like, Marcus, this charger is good to go. It had to be made like to my standards.
And I've been wearing this a while trying to break it in and it ain't.
It'll go eventually.
But I'm just saying that's good.
Yeah. And my whole thing, right, is like, you build something that will last a lifetime, right? And so I think a lot of people are kind of getting sick and tired of this, the Amazon model of business where you buy something cheap, but it's crap, and you have to buy a new one in 8 months, right? And so...
Something should be made to last.
Something should, right? And that's my biggest thing is that, you know, a good quality leather belt will last you a lifetime. And so it's kind of weird. Like, I never thought, like, I would be running a belt company. It's like the weirdest. Like, I know too much about men's hips,
dude.
Yeah,
we're all in that reality, bro.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, man.
So you have men's hips. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. That's great.
One of Marcus's really close friends and teammates, he has a belt story. He was active duty in the teams, but on a hunting trip, he went on a hunting trip in San Antonio, and he was on an ATV by himself at like 4 a.m, going from one lodge to another, and it rolled, cut off his arm.
Tourniqueted himself?
He did the tourniquet with his belt. Mm. And he has this story that when he was packing, he almost packed a different belt, and he was like, no, I need this belt's like my trusty belt or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he put it on. If he would have worn the other belt, it wouldn't have given enough to be able to be a tourniquet. Mm-hmm. That saved his life because he was by himself. His phone had flown off the ATV, couldn't find it. He had to walk like 3 miles to the lodge.
Best stories ever.
Yeah. And it was too cloudy for a life flight. They had to drive him to the hospital.
Dang.
And anyway, the belt ended up saving his life. So every time I think of a belt, I'm like, you have to have a good belt because what if... What if you're going to lose something? You need it for a tourniquet. That's my mind always
Team guys
think
like
that
too.
Yeah.
Like, what would that be cool for? What can I carry on that?
And my thing is like a belt, it's more than just something that keeps your pants up, right? It's a versatile tool for everyday life, dude. You can rescue a hot dog out of a car, you know, smash the window open. I mean, but, you know, and so that, the coolest thing about it, though, is like this whole thing that I've created, dude. I started a business with $41 straight up. Like, I bought a Shopify subscription. It was like $15. I bought the domain name right at the time I was running. That was like $12. I bought some stuff, arts and crafts supplies, and I bought a $1 belt from Goodwill or Salvation Army, and it ended up being like $41. So I started with $41. And now I hit $1 million in revenue.
Have you taken this to the teams to get the government contract on that yet?
So there's a process for like bidding on that and kind of like getting your...
So you can't just drive out in the front like the coffee shop ladies do and be like, hey, come get your damn belt so I don't have to go through the process?
Well, my
because you know they'd walk right out and do that.
Yeah. Well, my thing is I'm a newer company, right? I've only been around for 2.5 years. And so I'm getting the belts to the who, right? Getting it in
the
hands.
You know what you need to do, man? We need to go get an old Cadillac. Like a big one, and hang a bunch of belts from the trunk, and then dress up like old team guys. And when the new guys are walking in, just open up the trunk and be like, "Get your belt!"
Like old gold chains.
You know that would sell.
Yeah,
I mean, team guys eat that up.
Yeah, it's for us. It's a harder sell because it's a more expensive item, right? But it's quality and like the fact that you can.
They got money to burn. You know that.
Yeah,
they will. If it's good, if it's cool looking, a team guy will buy it.
Yeah.
This belt is for everybody. It can be for your traditional cowboy. It can be for just any businessman going to work.
Yeah, look, if we wear it, everybody else will too.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and that's my goal, right? Is like, I want to be... I want to be the largest distributor of men's leather belts. It's a very weird, very specific goal, right?
Which I know nothing about, so I'm glad you're here, bro.
Yeah, dude, so I'm like, you know, but
we got a team guy and everything. You're like, hey, anybody got a belt, dude?
Yeah,
we do. We got a
belt guy. So, and that's my thing, dude, is like, I literally wake up in the morning, and like, people used to tell me, you know, do what you love and the money will come, right? And I, like, every morning when I wake up, like, dude, I love making belts. It's the weirdest thing, dude. Yeah, it's so weird, and I'm not really proud of it. But
no, it should be.
But yes. And so that's the thing, right? It's like,
leather,
man.
Leather worker, man. That's you should be.
Yeah, and I really do, like, and so that's the thing. Like, I love what I'm doing, and I wake up every morning excited to do it because I'm giving people a really quality item, and it brings me that piece that I need, right? Because, dude, like, making leather belts, I'm like, you know, your VA gives you your suicide prevention plan. Like, number one for me was go do leather craft, right? And that, so it, there's a therapeutic aspect to it. And so my goal, what I would like to do is have a bunch of veterans. I believe in the artistic creative side, right? For guys like us,
yeah.
Who need that quiet between the ears, yeah, right? Yeah, for this thing to shut off, to be working with your hands. And that's really, you know, working with your hands, living a quiet life. And like you said earlier, like, God puts you through hard times, people coming out of your life, right? Like Romans 8:28, all things work for the glory of those who love God. And at the time when you're like in the hurricane, in the storm, you're shaking your fist at the sky being like, what the heck, man? But it's like everything bad that I had to go through led me to like where I am right now, which is sitting in a chair in front of Marcus Luttrell and you guys. And it's like, man, yeah. Like if you could have told me like 2.5 years ago, dude, I was sleeping in the back of my truck and like now I'm here. And it's just, it's amazing, right? And I think it's a miracle. And it's because I had to like abandon my own way and my own understanding. And I had to like rebuild on the rock, right? And put my faith first. And when I lost confidence in my own ability to do what I thought was right, because I was still in fight or flight or whatever it was.
Yeah.
When I kind of like buried my old self, right? And put on this new way and I like rebuilt on the word, right? Everything fell into place. And it was crazy to me. You know, hopefully we don't offend people talking about religion, but for me, dude, it was my saving grace, right? And when times for me got hard, I would focus on, you know, Jesus' sacrifice for me, dude. And like, I wasn't a believer, like, I call it eternity insurance shopping, right? When you're in some country that people don't know we're in and you're going on some operation that you could maybe, you know, this could be your last ride, you start searching for what's next. Right, you start looking through, like, you know, studying the different religions. So like, I wasn't saved by any chance, right? I was in need of God, so I cried out to Him in that time of my life. But when I got back to comfort, I went back to my old ways, right? But I really had to come to like the end of myself to realize that my way and my understanding wasn't working, and I had to make, you know, and that's where I go back to the, every time you point your finger, there's three more pointing back at you. It was me, right? I had to make the changes to turn my life around, and I did. And that's why I put John 3:16 on every box, right? God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. Whoever believes in Him shall have everlasting life. And on my worst days, dude, that's what I did. I focused on every detail of, you know, Jesus walking up that hill, right? Carrying that cross, dragging in the ground, digging into His shoulder, right? We know pain. You know what that's like. And it shifted my perspective, right? When I was sitting there with a bottle of pills, sleeping in the back of my truck with a loaded pistol, thinking like, you know what? Two years ago, I was doing, you know, working with the highest tier of guys in the country that very few people know we're at. And now I'm in the back of a Walmart. I'm sleeping in my back of my truck. My world is just wrecked. Like, what's the point? Why should I keep going, right? Mm-hmm. And I was invested in the linear path to success, right? I went to college, was a good kid, went to go be a team guy, and now I had this thing in my mind that was trying to break me, right? And that was how I had to learn a new way, dude, because I came to the end of myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did all the alternative medicines and those kinds of things, but for me, my saving grace was giving my life to Jesus and going all in on that. And I'm here today because of that, straight up. I'm not here today because of, you know, some of the different therapy models definitely bought me time, right, to like get healthy and get well. But it was my faith that allowed me to humble myself and become new, right?
I feel like the medicine will get you to a point of clarity to where you can search for your faith and really delve into it and understand like the true meaning of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have that discipline in your faith to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the alternative medicines that will keep you going. That's just going to get you to point A.
Well, there's a difference between you carrying it and it carrying you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you don't know that, there's a weight that comes with that,
mm-hmm.
like a heavy weight. And they say, hey, man, when everyone has their cross to bear, what are you going to let it carry? You're going to pick it up and carry it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all get saddled with something.
Yep.
If you know that, though, and you know that it's your job, once you carry it, it changes everything.
Yeah.
Like there's a feeling that goes with it. And everyone, no matter what you're doing, what environment you're in, what drug you're trying to take, you're going after a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And when you patch up with the boss, man, when Jesus gets a hold of you, it don't go away.
Yeah.
And all the rest of that crap goes away.
Yeah.
But there's a feeling that comes with this one, man, that doesn't. And I'm talking about from the time you get up to the time you freaking go to bed, and it don't care what you're doing now.
Yeah.
It's if you know you're supposed to be there, like if you know you're everyone in the morning, I just told him this. I teach my kids this. Everyone when I get up in the shower, I'm like, tell me where to go, who to see, what to say, and what to do. And in that way, no matter what I'm in, I'm covered.
Yeah.
I don't care if I had to insult you. Hey, bro, that wasn't me. That was the boss doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the mentality of you get into.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it helps because we don't have that in the beginning.
No.
Dude, if I knew this when we were back in, things would, I don't know.
I'd be different at least.
Things would have been different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to have fear, first of all, which I think was important to have for some of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's timing for everything, like all the phases in life, it all happens when it's supposed to happen.
Oh yeah, I guess you know. What if you want to be a belt maker when you're trying to be SEALs?
Yeah,
I want to
work that. No, that's the thing, man. Like to compare the two, yeah, right? Like I
get that.
I'm like, man, all I do is make belts now, and there's that side to it, right? But for me, right, I know that like God has a plan for my life, and He's put this passion in my heart, right, or given me this skill, and so, you know, when you're like trying to find God's purpose for you, right? Right now for me, I can say like my purpose feels like I make the best belts in the world, and I use my business and my personal story as a vehicle for the gospel message, right? And that is how I redeemed myself, or I was redeemed through putting my faith in Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to share that with other people, right? And it has affected my business in some regard, but in reality, it's like when you are living for the next life, right? There's nothing here any longer that can break you,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, I could say you become unbreakable when you're 100% paid up, and your eternity insurance is in God, right? And that for me is my message, and I use my business as a vehicle for that, right? And that's my goal. Be the change you want to see. Be a patriot. Build a good product. Tell a good, you know, your reputation, even though the uniform comes off, right? Your reputation is our currency.
Oh, that still rolls in, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your reputation, even though the uniform comes off, still goes, right? So, like that question for me, and I think every team guy always lives by, is how do you want to be remembered, right?
That's why we're hard on the guys still in.
Yeah.
Trident is a recognizable thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that title. That SEAL title. You throw that down on anywhere on the planet, then it's like when somebody walks in and says they're a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what they look like. As soon as you hit them with that doctor tag, everyone's like, oh okay, you know, there's obviously something in there.
Yeah.
Same way with the SEAL tag.
Mm-hmm.
So once you straddle that up, so what comes with that is expectation.
Yeah.
So they expect that to be a certain way. It better last, better be tough, better look good, cool.
Yeah.
You know, feel good, the whole thing.
And I think, too, you know, there's an expectation that a lot of guys get out and they maybe, like, they go to Stanford and they, you know, but there is there's a group of guys, I don't want to speak for the majority, but that when they, that new purpose, finding that new purpose, there's some struggling, there's some healing that
absolutely.
Needs
yeah, we got that.
To happen. And so, and that was, for me, was, you know, I wanted to, you know, whether it's like be vulnerable, but I wanted to share, like, hey, where were my total failures in my life? What led up to that? And, like, how can you not make the same mistake that I did?
Yeah, I don't know what propagates that, why some of our guys go into that, you know, go straight to Stanford, become doctors, orthopedic surgeons. I mean, we got them across the board.
Yeah, amazing group of people.
It's unbelievable. And then it's not the guys you think. Mm. And then we got the guys who come in out and they something happens to them and they get stuck in that dark place by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the guys who wouldn't think about doing that. That's one of the problems. You're like, yeah. Oh, he's good, dude. He wouldn't go there.
Yeah, and it,
those are the guys you got to worry about. And like, yes, they would. If a team guy can get into something, he will.
Yeah.
He just will.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just gets bored.
Yeah.
Simple boredom.
Yeah, and that, you know, for me is like kind of what I try to do is change a little bit of the conversation being had. And part of that is like maybe embarrassing myself, right, with my failures and being honest with people about, hey, like these are the mistakes that I made. And that's my whole thing is like give people, you know, or at least for the people who know my story, show like the part that you're not your highlight reel, right? Everybody wants to show their highlight reel all the time. But for me, I'm like, and my whole goal to do that is to show that one guy struggling, whether whatever branch of the
that
military
is a team
from.
Guy highlight reel. We don't want to see the good stuff. We know what the cool stuff looks like.
Yeah.
We want to see that other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, we're magnificent at that because
mm-hmm.
you're trying so hard.
Yeah.
So when we screw up, man, it looks great. I mean, it's something to watch, and people feed off of that, man. I mean, look at me. I made a living off of getting my ass kicked.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So what's your plan to grow? How are you going to get the word out? And
so I'm a kind of like, if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you've always got, right? Continue to invest in quality. I believe if you produce a quality item, it'll drive quantity, not the other way around. I still haven't taken any outside money. I still haven't taken on any investors. So my biggest thing is just like most team guys, we want to get there. We want to get there now, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, it's all about, you know, a continuation of building that reputation, right?
Slow as smooth,
absolutely. And just like I've always when I dumped everything back into the business, okay, you find ways to do things faster without sacrificing quality.
I don't know why we do that, but we do it.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of, you know, my long-term plan is, you know, be able to eventually make enough money. You own your building outright. You got a bunch of veterans working because I believe in the therapeutic aspect of leather craft, right? And we just a badass American-made brand.
Yeah.
Part of that is just I think what I've done has gotten me like to where I am now. So I'm going to keep doing that, keep finding good mentors, right, and keep just producing the best that I can. And
do you think you'll expand to other leather goods like wallets or other stuff, or will you stick to belts?
So my thing is like I want to be the best in the world at making belts. Isn't that
just
weird?
No, I like it. I like keeping.
Hey man, I completely agree with that. I saw, you know, I was walking by. I saw a Whataburger sign the other day. Said they had hot wings. I'm like, why in the hell?
I stopped there 2 days ago to try it out.
It's our health food store.
Yeah,
you got to get a Whataburger, dude.
Yeah,
like, there's a Buc-ee's right over here. Hit that
health
and get some
food.
Bluebell ice cream. That's a Texas hat trick. You're good to go, man.
Yeah,
well, leave a belt in there.
My
you should put your belts in Buc-ee's.
Buc-ee's.
Yes,
that place is amazing, dude.
Buc-ee's like, does a lot
brisket.
Of all American stuff.
Yeah,
it's like the Alamo. You know, that's the first place you gotta go. That's what Texas is about.
Yeah,
we got
okay
Buc-ee's.
We're gonna work on that.
Okay, yeah. Well, my thing, what my hope is, right, my if I had like one goal, it would be to peel back the complexity of being an entrepreneur. It's not that difficult if you're willing to work hard, work smart, right, and take care of people, right? You know, business is all about your relationships with people, providing that customer service. But I want to show, like, dude, I built a $1 million business with $41. You can do it too. I'm nobody special. It's not complicated. All I did was I work hard. I found a niche.
Yep. You need to start a show. Not in the way they got that Shark Tank, Seal Tank.
I went on Shark Tank, dude.
You did?
Yeah. They didn't take me. They didn't take me.
Oh, so, well, here we are, man. Right here. Welcome to the Seal Tank.
Yeah. I flew out there. I stood in line for like 6 hours. You know, I did my pitch and all that because I heard another team guy who started a bottle opener company. He made like his episode aired. He made a bunch of money. And I was like, man, if I could do that, right, then you get your. So I went there. I did my little pitch and all that, but I didn't make it. So it was, you know, but it was good because.
I mean, it's like someone kicked off a voice, dude. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
You turn out to be the best there is.
So do you want to do, are you ever going to get to a point where you do want your belts in like fine men's stores, or you just wanted to do straight to. But are you going to do straight to consumer only?
Yeah, so right now we're direct to consumer. I think with distribution, right, a lot of people, they want to stock a Chinese good because the margin is higher there, right? And so for us, because we build every single part. There's 14 precision machine parts in our belts.
Yeah.
That there's not that margin of like, if I was like outsource and get them made in Mexico for $12 a pop and then put them in the store for $50, mm-hmm. I can't do that. So my goal is to definitely, like 5-year plan would be to be in a store or do those kinds of things.
Keep it random to where you have to find these things.
Yeah. Like, if you know, you know, kind of deal.
Right. Like, yeah. For whatever reason, they were in this store in this state during this year, but then they don't have them the next, I don't know.
Oh, Marcus loves hidden things.
Bro, you know
things.
Me, man. I'll come up with some
he
stuff.
He loves some scavenger hunt man, kind like, of hidden things.
They'll search for those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then buy all of them at one time.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Dude. I mean, as a consumer, I look for fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy because it's like, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, what does everybody need, right? What is a, you know, and like everybody needs a belt.
Everybody
right?
needs a damn
everybody
belt,
needs another belt, and then you need a black one, brown one. They've and got new shoes. You need one to match those, and then your girl needs a belt.
That's right. They make your closet smell better with the leather.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
a win-win
dude.
For everybody.
Okay, so one thing, like I had mentioned earlier, you do the commercials with you hitting the cinder block and breaking it. Would you be willing to do that here with Marcus?
Absolutely. Let's string it up.
I got one out there.
Okay, we've got one out there for us to film.
Okay.
And have Marcus whip a cinder block in half.
All right, well, you need to be careful. It'll blow back, cut your hand up. See like this right here? Those are all...
Oh, you've actually been wounded.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Oh, yeah. This
There's
is
a couple times I hit like cattle
bro,
fence
this is your
and came around.
For sure. This is the best. If you've taken...
You've
if you
bled.
Bled for it,
bled, dude.
You've bled,
bled
for this thing.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
It's, yeah, so...
Congratulations, man. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Way
no.
to go.
The, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So let's That's do it.
A, yeah,
okay,
a little
so
bit.
Where can our followers find you? How can they buy the belt?
Yeah, so if you go to macbelts.com, www.mack, and then belts, social media, macbelts. I do a lot of marketing on LinkedIn. That's kind of like where my business has thrived, right? My individual story
yeah.
from, so I do a lot of that on LinkedIn. So we're pretty much everywhere on social media. Just type in Mac Belts, and you'll see some weird guy in some blue jeans hitting some stuff.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good.
Well,
man.
Thank you for
great,
coming
great time,
on. And
yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for your service, man.
No, thank you for your service.
Under the Trident, dude. So
yeah,
I'm proud of you. Just from the time you came in, the time you got, getting through your injury, getting through the dark phase we have to go through coming out.
Marcus calls it the Black Spider-Man days.
Yeah, Black Spider-Man days.
Black Spider-Man days.
Yeah.
And you know, getting back on the other side and then giving it back. What, like. Here's the deal, man. Once you're a team guy, Jesus gives us a lot of slack.
Yeah.
Okay? You just got to square your ass away on the back end and just do what you're supposed to be doing and be good, all right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's the best thing about being a SEAL, man. I think we get a check mark to where, you get busted up. We did some stupid stuff, whatever. You're a team guy. Get your ass back out there and be one.
Yeah. All right, set cool. a good example, dude, always.
So always set a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Have a great attitude.
Yeah.
That one thing, I don't care what we're in, man. If you're the one that keeps that badass attitude, it changes the game.
Yep.
All right, cool, man.
I love it.
Thank you so much.